I was the executive director of Outright International, and we did a lot of advocacy at the United Nations because LGBTQI people in many parts of the world couldn't receive justice within national borders. In my time in the State Department, we placed an enormous focus on activating U.S. foreign policy so that all aspects from national security to economic development to public health had some relationship to LGBTQI plus rights.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Dutch Parliament moves to ban conversion therapy, Hong Kong lawmakers nix same-gender couples' rights, and expert advice for global queer rights advocates. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm Melanie Keller.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending September 13th, 2025. The lower house of the Dutch parliament voted on September 9th to criminalize so-called conversion therapy. Initial opposition from conservative members of parliament's Tweede Kamer was allayed. Conversion therapy refers to the debunked practice of curing queer sexual orientation or gender identity through a combination of counseling and prayer. The bill's proponents stressed to those concerned about protecting pastoral conversations that it will only be a criminal offense to use systematic or intrusive methods utilizing severe psychological pressure. It took quite a while to arrange that compromise as the bill's supporters worked to gather a majority, according to Christian News in Europe. Social liberal MP Vika Palusma said after the vote, "Love does not need to be cured. With this law, we protect vulnerable people from harmful practices that endanger their health and safety. This is a choice for freedom, equality, and human dignity." Passage of the bill is a victory to Mattia Danso, chair of the venerable Dutch queer advocacy group COC Nederland. She said, "You are perfect just the way you are. Never let anyone tell you otherwise." A victory in the upper house of parliament is still needed to make the ban on conversion therapy the law of the land.
A bill to grant Hong Kong's same-gender couples limited legal rights was overwhelmingly voted down on September 10th. For gay and lesbian couples who either legally married or obtained civil unions overseas, it would have allowed registration of same-gender relationships for the first time in Hong Kong. Mutual medical decision-making and after-death arrangements were among the limited rights offered. 71 of the Legislative Council's 86 members rejected the government-backed measure, and one abstained. Legislator Maggie Chan was convinced the bill rocks the foundation of the monogamous and heterosexual marriage system in Hong Kong, as she told the Hong Kong Free Press. Famously anti-LGBTQ lawmaker Junius Ho fretted about how Father's Day and Mother's Day would be celebrated. Some opponents called it an opportunity to show that the Legislative Council is not a rubber stamp for the Hong Kong government. A knowledgeable source told the Washington Blade that Beijing was unlikely to interfere. Pressure is building on the Legislative Council. In September 2023, the Hong Kong Court of Appeal gave lawmakers until October 27th of this year to find some way to legally recognize same-gender couples. 60% of Hong Kongers supported marriage equality in a 2023 survey, cited by the Free Press.
Queers and their allies in the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv held LGBTQ plus Pride on September 6 in the very midst of the Russian invasion. Pride co-organizer and president of the Sphere Women's Association, Anna Sharihina, told the Washington Blade, "Kharkiv needs Kharkiv Pride, a powerful and vivid distinction from Russia." Organizers described an hour-long procession of about 50 LGBTQ activists, volunteers, and service members in 17 cars escorted by police vehicles. They said they drove through the city to draw attention to the importance of ensuring human rights for all through legislation. There have been successful and peaceful pride parades in Kyiv the past 2 years, but that kind of event in Kharkiv would have raised major security concerns. Ukraine's second largest city is less than 30 miles from the Russian border in the eastern part of the country. An undaunted Sharahina said, "We strive to live in a free and safe country and to have the same rights that heterosexual people already enjoy. Every day, LGBTQ+ people contribute to the victory, so the state must finally provide us with protection."
Transgender students in South Carolina can use campus bathrooms that align with their gender identity, for now. The U.S. Supreme Court has rejected the state's request for emergency relief to enforce its trans bathroom ban, a denial based on the standards applicable for obtaining emergency relief from this court. The nonprofit legal group Public Justice cheered. Contrary to South Carolina's insistence, trans students are not emergencies. The ruling maintains a lower court's injunction against the state law on sex-segregated facilities, while its constitutionality is being challenged. Far-right justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch wanted to grant the state's request to lift the injunction. The High Court's brusque, unsigned order only noted that it was not a ruling on the merits of the legal issues presented in the litigation. South Carolina's 2024 law threatens any public school with the loss of a quarter of its state funding if it allows transgender students to use appropriate restrooms. And now, 15-year-old transgender boy in Berkeley County was suspended for using the boys' bathroom. His family filed suit, represented by the advocacy group Alliance for Full Acceptance. A panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit in Richmond, Virginia, blocked the law in August. The appeals court relied on its own 2020 ruling in Grimm versus Gloucester County School Board. It had found that bathroom bans targeting transgender students violate both Title IX and the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. South Carolina is pointing to the Supreme Court's United States versus Scrimeti decision in June. Scrimeti did not deal with bathroom bans, but it did uphold Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming health care for minors. Several cases on transgender rights are already on the Supreme Court docket beginning in October. They include a challenge to Colorado's ban on so-called conversion therapy and a trans sports ban in West Virginia. In representing the South Carolina team, Public Justice's press statement said of trans students, "They are not threats. They are young people looking to learn and grow at school, despite the state-mandated hostility they too often face."
Finally, Oregon state lawmaker Cyrus Javadi says he's had enough. The frustrated Republican represents Tillamook, Astoria, and other North Coast communities. He recounted his disappointments with his party in an extended Substack post. In his words, "Protecting Medicaid benefits for the nearly 60% of children in Tillamook and Clatsop counties, opposed. Keeping rural hospitals afloat, opposed. Preserving students' access to books that reflect who they are, opposed. Protecting the First Amendment rights of people different from ourselves, opposed. Not because the policies were flawed, but because helping me deliver for my district didn't fit the Republican Party's agenda." And so Javadi told Portland's KGW-TV News that he's bidding the Republicans a not-so-fond adieu.
"Since Donald Trump got into office, I've been somewhat concerned. And, just the way that he went about trying to solve problems or burn things down and watching the Republican Party, I determined that the party was moving on and I wasn't going to move on with it. And I was going to work with a party like the Democratic Party that was there for me over and over and over again to solve those problems that were important to Oregon and to the North Coast."
In June, Javadi was the only Republican to vote for a bill to prevent anti-queer book bans in schools because he said that reading helped his own gay son understand his identity. He told his colleagues, "Let's not teach our kids that their stories are too controversial to belong on the shelf." As unsubstantiated threats to mount a recall campaign against him circulate, Javadi insists that his values have not changed, and that Republicans have proven to be leaders who'd rather go viral than go fix roads. He plans to run for re-election as a Democrat. He would have faced almost certain defeat in the Republican primary, but it's not likely that a Democratic challenger will emerge. Either way, for Javadi, changing parties is not changing principles, or as he says, I still believe in limited government, free speech, fiscal responsibility, individual liberty, and the rule of law. I still believe your rights don't come from the state, but from something higher. But I also believe government has to work, not just posture.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending September 13th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Joe Bainline. Stay safe.
Dorothy Allison, author of Bastard Out of Carolina and numerous trashy pieces. You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
In 2025, same-gender sex has been outlawed in Trinidad and Tobago and Burkina Faso, and in Indonesia, a pair of gay college students endured 80 lashes. Pride event organizers fought the governments of Turkey and Hungary. Queer events were raided in Malaysia and Russia, and trans rights are under attack almost everywhere. It sure would be a great time for the U.S. to have a top LGBTQI+ diplomat, but not in the second Trump administration. This Way Out's David Hunt finds that the one and only person to ever hold the post continues to unapologetically speak truth to power, and she has some advice for champions of queer human rights in a hostile world.
There was a time when the foreign policy of the United States, under the direction of the U.S. Department of State, advanced democracy around the world and supported the human rights of marginalized people, even people oppressed because of their sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. The State Department even had, for a time, a senior diplomat, a special envoy to advance LGBTQI+ human rights. Under the second Trump administration, not surprisingly, that position is now vacant as the United States retreats from its position of global leadership in diplomacy and human rights. I'm David Hunt. The last U.S. Special Envoy to advance the human rights of LGBTQI+ persons was Jessica Stern, who was appointed to the post by President Joe Biden in September 2021. She stepped down January 20th, 2025, the day Donald Trump took the presidential oath. Stern is a longtime human rights activist who served for a decade as executive director of Outright International, a nonprofit organization that works to combat violence and discrimination against LGBTQ people. Today, she serves as a senior human rights and U.S. foreign policy fellow at the Carr Ryan Center for Human Rights at the Harvard Kennedy School. I sat down with Stern to discuss her tenure at the State Department and her advice for fellow activists. But first, I noted that we were meeting close to the anniversary of a historic event. On August 24, 2015, almost exactly 10 years ago, the UN Security Council, for the first time ever, held a meeting that focused on LGBTQ human rights. Stern was there and spoke to that gathering of diplomats. I asked her to tell me about that moment in history.
10 years ago was a really harrowing time if you were doing work in solidarity with LGBTQI people in Iraq and Syria. ISIS had taken control of vast parts of those countries, and not only were LGBTQI people unsafe, everybody was unsafe. Women and girls, Yazidis, anyone who didn't conform to an extremist notion of gender conformity and traditional ideals about how to behave in the world. I was the executive director of Outright International, and we did a lot of advocacy at the United Nations because as a global LGBTQI rights organization, it was very clear to us that LGBTQI people in many parts of the world couldn't receive justice within national borders. And the UN, then as now, is an incredibly useful place for LGBTQI activists to turn to help get attention on the world stage to human rights abuses they were experiencing. Unfortunately, when ISIS took control of the country, we were receiving reports, often on a daily basis, of the ways that ISIS was targeting men they perceived to be gay. And so at that moment, we reached out to the U.S. mission to the United Nations. And we said, there's never been a UN Security Council briefing on anything related to LGBTQI issues. And they said, we would be happy to work on this event, but it won't be an official event of the Security Council. We can't get all of the permanent members to agree to an event like this. But what we can do is what's known as an ARIA, which is basically a side event that influences the official proceedings of the Security Council. And the U.S. reached out to the government of Chile, and Chile agreed to co-sponsor the event. And so thanks to Chile and the United States, we broke the lavender ceiling, and we held the first ever LGBTQI event on the margins of the UN Security Council. And it was one of the most emotional UN meetings I'd ever been a part of. We had a Syrian gay man who testified anonymously about what he had experienced at the hands of ISIS. We had a gay Iraqi man who very bravely told his story and gave his name. And I was brought in as the human rights expert to sort of provide the overview. And it was a unique story because ISIS was so deliberate in advertising its murders of men they perceived to be gay. And many of your listeners will probably remember that ISIS would take to social media and show photographs of their agents pushing men they accused of being gay off of the tops of buildings. And David, there was something so harrowing about that, that those images cut across religion and culture and nation, and people everywhere were horrified. And so from that tragedy, we actually found common ground with a lot of unlikely suspects. And in the end, because of the depravity of ISIS, we actually had no formal opposition from any governments. Not a single UN member state protested that ARIA, which showed that there actually is humanity to be found in this world.
Fast forward five and a half years or so, you have a line on your LinkedIn bio. It says, I led U.S. foreign policy related to LGBTQI plus rights and represented the U.S. government globally. That sentence is doing a lot of heavy lifting. How do you approach a job that big?
When I was invited to entertain the idea of becoming the special envoy for LGBTQI rights, it was a really hard decision. I asked myself, did I want to take on the affiliation with U.S. foreign policy, which, as we know, has not always been respectful of human rights and national sovereignty of other countries. But in the end, it was not a very hard decision to make because LGBTQI people around the world are radically under-resourced in terms of political, economic, and sociocultural support. And we need allies. We need powerful allies. We had a brand new tool in diplomacy, and we had the potential to really shape it, shape its existence, shape its impact, ensure that it acted with integrity. So with a little bit of hemming and hawing, with a lot of support from my partner who agreed to move to Washington, D.C. for 4 years, with a lot of love from my extraordinary community at Outright International, where I'd been executive director for a decade, I packed my bags and took the job. And off to Washington I went.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt, continuing my conversation with activist and educator Jessica Stern, the U.S. Special Envoy for LGBTQ plus human rights in the Biden administration. I asked Stern where she thought U.S. policy had done the most to advance LGBTQ human rights during her tenure at the State Department.
In my time in the State Department, we placed an enormous focus on activating U.S. foreign policy so that all aspects, from national security to economic development to public health, had some relationship to LGBTQI plus rights. And that is absolutely essential, because if LGBTQI issues are just seen as a niche concern, then we never get enough resources. And so one of the things I would always say is, please don't just invite me to your pride party. Don't just bake rainbow cupcakes, do U.S. foreign policy and include and prioritize the experiences of LGBTQI plus people. And we made a lot of progress with that. You know, I can remember one time there was a proposed sodomy law making its way through a particular country's legislative process. And I found out that the U.S. Secretary of State, Secretary Blinken, was going to be meeting with that country's foreign minister. And I worked every connection that I had. And I eventually ended up in that meeting, sitting at the right hand of the Secretary of State, so that even if I did nothing other than say my title, their government knew that the U.S. was watching and the U.S. was concerned. And in the end, I didn't actually need to say anything because Secretary Blinken delivered the LGBTQI plus talking points for me, for us, for everyone. The second area I would say is working in the global arena with other governments that are supportive of LGBTQI plus rights. David, there just aren't a lot of governments that are putting political and financial energy into the human rights of LGBTQI people. And so when Uganda introduced its Anti-Homosexuality Act, when Hungary banned Pride, when Russia announced that the so-called international LGBTQ movement was a terrorist force, there weren't that many governments that metaphorically raised their hands and said, this is a problem. But because the U.S. has so much global influence, and because our State Department and USAID, when it existed, may it rest in peace, just had so much capacity that other governments didn't, we were able to help anchor responsible engagement by governments that cared about LGBTQI people around the world. And then I think the third and final piece that really felt like a huge success is more LGBTQI people around the world in situations of danger felt like there was someone they could call in times of crisis. And that really meant the most to me. You know, after I left government, I met with one of the smartest, most talented lawyers that I know who works in East Africa. And she said, I don't love that the U.S. has such a big impact on the world. In fact, I'd be the first to critique it. But I want to tell you that when you were in your role, if something bad happened, I knew that there was someone I could call and someone would pick up the phone. And right now, I really ask myself, when something bad happens, who do they call? And is there anyone who will pick up the phone?
Yeah, it's a new world with the Trump administration. And a lot of LGBTQ people and organizations are in despair over the political environment in the U.S. Do you have a message for them of how to meet the moment?
I would start by remembering our community that we have been here before and we have come through it, but we have come through it by not staying silent. The way we come through moments like this is by protesting, by taking to the streets, by writing letters to the editor, by holding our elected officials accountable, by electing different public officials if the ones we have now don't serve us, by making donations to organizations that serve our community, by inventing new strategies for visibility when rainbow crosswalks get paved over in black tar. We know how to rise up. And the number one thing I would say to all of our listeners is, if you are in a moment of despair, the way to get through this moment of despair is to be loud and to mobilize so that we make this moment as short as possible and we come through it stronger together.
I'd like to thank Jessica Stern for talking with me for this program. Stern is a senior human rights and U.S. foreign policy fellow at the Carr Ryan Center at Harvard. She served in the Biden administration as the U.S. Special Envoy advancing the human rights of LGBTQI plus persons. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
We're gonna work for change together. Work for change together.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Joe Bainline and Melanie Keller and produced by Brian DeShazer. David Hunt produced this week's feature. Rachel Berenger, the Marshall Tucker Band, The Rascals, Ian Post, and Judy Small performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Richard Merck and Brad Payton celebrating their 50th year together, Brad Furr of KGAY Palm Springs, California, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at Post Office Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WWSX Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, 2XX Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, KKFI Kansas City, Missouri, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.